episode of the Nick Bob Podcast is brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors. You know, a new set of windows or a new door can do a lot of things for you. It can totally change the look or the feeling or the vibe of your home. Plus, it can add value to your home and make your home more energy efficient. Pella checks all those boxes and then some. Pella can provide window and door solutions to any home and work with the people at Pella second to none. So now is the time. Turn your window and door remodeling dreams into a reality with Pella. Check them out online, PellaOmaha.com. That's PellaOmaha.com. And the Nick Bob Podcast is brought to you by my good friends at Runza. You know, we always talk about the greatness of the Runza sandwich, the amazing burgers, the best fries on the planet, the crinkle fries. But Runza has two of my favorite salads on the planet. All right. You got the Southwest chicken salad with the spicy ranch. Absolutely delicious. And they got the sweet berry chicken salad. You got dried cranberries popping off of fresh greens, a perfect complement of rich feta cheese and walnuts, and a creamy poppy seed dressing to top it all off. It's delicious. So get to Runza today and try a salad. Runza makes it all better. Okay, on the pod today, a very special guest, a guy that I have known for 14 years now, 13, 14 years. I met ESPN college basketball analyst Jay Billis before Creighton was playing Southern Illinois my senior year, and College Game Day was doing the game. So, you know, Reese Davis and Jay Billis and Aaron Andrews and the whole crew, Dan Shulman, the whole crew was there. And they did a pregame there, and they called our game, and I was able to introduce myself to Jay at shoot-around, and, you know, we exchanged contact information because I told him, hey, man, you know, I want to be a college basketball analyst. This is my dream, and he's been in touch with me ever since. The guy is a grade A, 10 out of 10 human being. I mean, he's an unbelievable guy. Anytime I've reached out to him, he's gotten back to me. I've asked for advice, guidance in this industry, whatever. I mean, he has always been there for me, and I really, really appreciate it, man. So I hit him up. I said, you know, with the Final Four coming up, who better to talk to than Jay to get his thoughts on these Final Four teams, UCLA, Gonzaga, Baylor, and Houston, get his thoughts on the matchup. And then, of course, we, as we always do with Jay, we always have we get into some in-depth things regarding, you know, name, image, and likeness and a bunch of different stuff. So we tackle a lot of different things regarding college athletics, college basketball. This is really, 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 really good. So I think you're going to enjoy it. So let's get to it. Here's my podcast chat with ESPN college basketball analyst Jay Billis. Enjoy. Well, he's Jay Billis of ESPN, ESPN college basketball analyst, really one of the faces of the network and a guy that's always been great to me, kind enough to take some time. Jay, how you doing, my man?
I'm doing great, Nick. How you doing?
I'm doing just fine. I'm doing a little bit better than my bracket's doing. I guess how busted up is your bracket? What team did you miss the most on?
Illinois. Oh, I thought Illinois was headed to the Final Four, and I like their draw. And then I clearly missed on Alabama because I thought they would, they would certainly get past the Sweet 16. I thought it would be Alabama and Michigan in the regional final. I did not see UCLA. I thought UCLA was going to lose to Michigan State in the play-in game.
So did I.
I mean, it took them overtime, but I didn't see them get this far.
Yeah, I think that I had Oklahoma State get into the Final Four. I thought they were you kind of got to take a wild swing. I was like, man, Cade Cunningham, the athleticism of that group. But I certainly didn't see Oregon State coming either. So you just never know what's going to happen.
Yeah, this was a little bit bizarre, though. I mean, you know, there had to be some weird things to happen for each one of those things to happen for UCLA and Oregon State. I mean, Oregon State, if they don't win their conference tournament, if UCLA made a free throw at the end of regulation in the opening game of the Pac-12 tournament, this whole Oregon State thing was done right there.
Right.
I mean, it's really kind of amazing. And they played very well and beat good teams. I mean, you know, beat Tennessee, but, you know, Tennessee's been kind of offensively challenged from game to game throughout the year. And then Oklahoma State is kind of young in spots, and it showed up against Oregon State in the tournament. But, you know, really surprising to see both those teams reach a regional final, UCLA and Oregon State, let alone, you know, UCLA makes the Final Four. So just a bizarre happening.
Yeah, Jay, you know, it's funny. So, you know, I text you to bring on and to talk about the Final Four, and the day that we're set to record this here, we're recording this on March 31st here. It's Wednesday. The NCAA is in front of the Supreme Court for some oral arguments regarding players getting paid off name, image, and likeness. So I feel like I got to ask you a few things about it. I mean, you've obviously been beating this drum for a long time. I think we're in lockstep. Like, listen, it's hard to call something amateur athletics when coaches are making, you know, $5, $6, $7 million a year, or, you know, rights fees are going for $1 billion. Some coaches like Archie Miller are getting paid $10 million to not coach. But, you know, I also think, and I think you're with me on this, like, I don't want to ever paint like being on scholarship at Duke or Creighton isn't a great thing. So I always think we got to be careful with that. But I definitely am for name, image, and likeness, because it just feels kind of fundamentally wrong to not be able to make money off your name and yourself. Does it feel like an inevitability now that this is going to happen? The final ruling is coming in June. Name, image, and likeness rights are coming to college athletics.
I think it's going to be way more than that. I think ultimately we'll get to where the players are paid for play, and they'll be signed to contracts, because there's really no excuse not to do it. And look, I get it where, you know, some people hear you say, you know, talk about the economic rights of players, and they say, hey, you know, I wish I had a scholarship. Well, I'm sure you wish you could have played professional golf or, you know, made money as a professional musician. There are a lot of things that people wish they could do, but the truth is every student is allowed to make as much money as they want to make. And it's not like athletes are the only ones that get full scholarships and stipends. They're not. There's actually more scholarship money provided to non-athletes than to athletes. But nobody says, hey, wait a minute, you know, you science student on full scholarship, you shouldn't be allowed to make money while you're in school. You're paid already. You know, it's an absurd notion when you really think of it that way. But we've lived under this sort of regime for a long time where the schools have colluded to limit only one class of person while at the same time making money off that class. And we've accepted it. Right. And it's no longer acceptable. So I don't feel like I needed to be grateful for my scholarship any more than any student was grateful for the opportunities that they had. Every student on scholarship has earned it, whether it's an athletic scholarship, a music scholarship, English, journalism, you name it. They've all earned it. So it's not, you're not getting anything for free, but why should athletes be restricted? Right. That's what I don't get. And I get a little annoyed by, you know, people at, you know, saying that, oh, well, I would have loved to have had a scholarship. Well, why didn't you get one then? You were right. You had the opportunity, sure, to get it just like everybody else.
Sure.
And what you're really saying is I didn't have it, therefore you shouldn't have it.
Right. Right.
And that's profoundly wrong.
Yeah. Last big picture thing on kind of college athletics, and we'll get to the Final Four, Jay. I think I've even heard you say this, you know, college basketball needs to be more inclusive than exclusive. And we, I mean the caretakers and lovers of the game of college basketball, we got to make it an attractive situation for players to want to come and stay. But here's kind of my big thought, and I want to bounce it off you. I think the biggest issue plaguing college basketball is continuity. I think the constant roster turnover is not good. I think it takes a toll on fan interest. I think it takes a toll on the overall quality of the sport. And for the record, Jay, like, I think continuity is an issue in the NBA. Like, when stars are changing teams every year, it's not good. And I feel like I can be pro player power and mobility, but also acknowledge, like, hey, there are some ramifications and issues that come with that. So I guess my question to you is, like, how can we make college basketball an attractive place for players to come, stay for more than a year? And then obviously the transfer thing, like, how do we kind of get our arms around that?
Well, I don't know that we need to do either.
Okay.
You know, for me, the idea is, like, for colleges and universities, if you believe in education, why would we put up barriers for athletes to be in school? Like, if we really believe that the best place for an athlete to be is in school, to benefit from not only the classroom education and the socialization of being in school, but to establish a relationship with an institution of higher learning that's going to last for the rest of your life, why would we say, well, hey, if you don't want to play by our rules, then don't come at all. The G League's open to you. Go to Europe. That to me sounds so elitist and stupid. I can't imagine it. And is this all because we want to control every dollar? It can't be that. We would never say that to a non-athlete.
Right.
And we don't say it to a non-athlete. And I don't understand why, if we really think that education is such a great thing. And I think you and I share that belief that it's the best thing for a young adult. And these are adults. Like we fall all over ourselves to call them kids when a number of these athletes have their own children. They're
right.
adults.
Right.
And by the way, it's called, not to you, but to people who insist on infantilizing the players by calling them kids. They call it men's basketball and women's basketball. It's not called, it's not boys and girls basketball. But what was the harm in having Zion Williamson there? If he wants to leave, he's established a relationship with an institution. He's more likely to come back. That's a good thing. And then a number of these players have given so much money to their universities that were, quote, one and done, whether it's Kevin Love or Kevin Durant or Carmelo Anthony, have given millions upon millions of dollars to their schools. How can we consider that to be a bad thing? But on the transfer side, now interest and all that stuff, I don't think interest is down because of transfers. In fact, I don't think that's even close. Like the NBA has never been more popular than it is now. And college basketball, there's never been more eyeballs on it than there is now. Ratings are higher. Ratings are continuing to grow. Now, some people say that our audience is older and all that, and that may not last forever. I don't know the answer to that. But we can, on one hand, tell the players, hey, if you don't want to play by our rules, then go pro.
Right.
And so we're willing to kick them out the door. But transferring is the problem. I don't think it's that way. I mean, to me, if you want a player to stay, then provide them with the incentive to stay. One, if they're making money, they'll stay. Mm-hmm. But two, if you're saying, I don't buy these coaches that say, well, the players leave at the first bit of adversity. Like, really? So that's why don't you make the case to the player? So the player should be bound by a decision they make in high school when they have no college experience. But after having college experience and being through it, they know it's not for them and they want to leave. Right. Then they're an idiot. So they're smart out of high school when they pick me, the coach, right. when they don't know anything about me. But after being around me for a year and they want to leave, then they're an idiot with too many people in their ear. That doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me.
Right.
And my thing is, hey, if we're not going to pay them, we have no say in what they do.
Sure.
If you're going to pay them, sign them to a contract, then you got a leg to stand on. But I don't really what we're saying it really comes down to this, Nick. If we're going to go back to this year in residence nonsense and make them sit out a year, what we're really saying is the only way to make them stay is to make it too restrictive for them to leave. And how can we have a year in residence when they transfer from school to school when there's no year in residence when they come to college in the first place? So we're saying that they need to have a year to acclimate themselves to their new school where they didn't need a year when they came from high school to college. That's a tough one.
Right. Yeah. No, tons of great points. I always love getting your thoughts on this. This is great. Okay. Let's enough of that stuff. Let's get some hoops here, Jay. Final four set, Gonzaga, UCLA, Houston, and Baylor. Obviously the big story all season long has been Gonzaga. And so let's start there. I mean, 30-0, they're not just chasing a title. They're chasing history. They're chasing sports immortality. For me, Jay, when I turn on the tape and when I watch them play, it's the passing that impresses me the most. Like, they're maybe one of the best passing teams I've seen in a long, long time. When you sit down and you watch them play, what jumps off the screen to you the most?
Best passing and cutting team I've seen in my time in basketball, and the highest IQ collective that I've seen. The easy thing to say is they're really well coached, and they are well coached. But there are a bunch of coaches that can conceptually come up with how Gonzaga plays. The players can't execute it. These guys have multiple pros that have an understanding of the game that is next level. And that's why they're able to run the offense they do without having to run. They don't run set plays or continuity. They read and react to what they see. They have certain principles, but some of their vertical cuts, their cutting is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And as you know, they get more layups than anybody, and maybe more layups than any team that's ever played. They score 50 points in the paint, and it's not because they throw the ball into some behemoth center that just dunks it. They get it, and they did it to USC. Like, these numbers amazed me. So USC is a good defensive team. USC gives up 24 points in the paint per game on average. And the high that they gave up this year was 36. Gonzaga had 32 at halftime. At halftime.
Yeah.
And you know, they played both man and zone, USC did, and Gonzaga cut them up in their zone. Absolutely cut them up and got layup after layup after layup. So USC, best shot blocking team in the country, 5.3 blocks a game. Their block percentage was really high too. It wasn't the highest in the country, but it was in the top 10. And they blocked zero of Gonzaga's shots. Zero. That team is legit.
Yeah.
And like we all kind of thought, I believe that Gonzaga and Baylor were the two best teams, and then Michigan healthy had risen to that level. You know, we're never going to know because Isaiah Livers didn't play in the tournament or the Big Ten tournament. But I think we're about to get the game that everybody said they wanted in the final, Gonzaga-Baylor. And if we get that, that'll test the old ratings theory. I think it'll be the highest rated game we've had in a long time.
Yeah, that'll be – I mean, because that's – yeah, just like I said, it feels like it's been a crash course for those two teams to meet with each other. You know, you brought up UCLA at the top of our conversation. And in a lot of ways, they kind of embody what the essence of the tournament is all about, where it's like, hey, no matter what, when March comes, you got hope and an opportunity to make a run. I mean, they had lost four in a row heading into the tournament. They come through the first four, and now they're in the final four. And it's not – I was kind of lukewarm on Mick Cronin to UCLA, not because I didn't think Mick Cronin can coach. He can definitely coach. I just wasn't sure about the fit. Like, his teams at Cincinnati were kind of grind you out-athlete you, not a ton of skill, win 54-51 – and I wasn't sure how that would fit out west, but man, has he done an amazing job this year. What was it, Jay? They lost their five-star point guard to the G Leagues before the season started. They lost another player to injury who was arguably their best player. They lost another guy to personal reasons, and here they are in the Final Four. Like, Mick Cronin's done a heck of a job this season.
Yeah, they lost Dacian Nix to the G League. Chris Smith got injured. He was their best player last year, and then Jalen Hill left the team. So, yeah, they're down three guys that arguably would have been starters for them. And you know, look, I think Mick is a great coach. I've known him forever since I used to do his games when he was at Murray State. And he's been around a long time, and he's always done a great job. I think everybody was interested to see if the fit would work out at UCLA, because not a lot of things have worked out there. Even
right.
Ben Howland,
right.
When Ben Howland got fired, I remember getting in arguments with different people on the air about, you know, they needed to get rid of Howland. I'm going, Howland took him to three straight Final Fours. Like, you think anybody's going to do better than that in the short run? Like, Steve Alford's going to do better. He's not going to do better than that.
Right.
You know, maybe he'll do as well, but he's not going to do better. And I don't know what, now, if UCLA had missed the tournament this year, which they almost did, I don't know what UCLA fans would be saying right now. I have no idea. They're happy right now, but they are getting – they got 51-49 against Michigan.
Yeah.
And they loved it because they won.
Yep.
I don't know if they'll love it long-term out there. We'll see.
Yeah.
But Mick's a great coach. But how about this, Nick? So UCLA, their last two games, they haven't shot 40%. They've won them both against Alabama and Michigan. Not 40%. And
Sheesh.
Their opponents in those two games are a combined 17 of 36 from the free throw line. So the UCLA's free throw defense has been magnificent. Like, Mick's going to be giving clinics on it. This is a way to keep free throw percentages down of your opponents. You know, if those teams make free throws, we're not talking about this.
Sure.
And
sure.
I mean, it's so crazy how this stuff goes. But when you get to the Final Four, like, I just don't give them – I don't give them much of a chance at all against Gonzaga. You're certainly not going to score 51 and beat them. That ain't going to happen.
Right.
So it'll be interesting to see if they can hang with them. I don't see it. But, look, we've been surprised before.
All right, let's take a quick break from the podcast to talk about White Castle Roofing. You know, one of the best decisions I've made was calling White Castle Roofing when my roof had some hail damage back in the day to my old house in Omaha. I needed experts. I needed people I can trust. That's White Castle. White Castle Roofing made the entire process so easy and so smooth, and they did a great job. They communicate every step of the way in their crews. They're knowledgeable. They care about the details, and cleanup is a top priority. So if you need experts you can trust, White House Roofing is the answer. In fact, I'm dealing with a leak in my roof in my new house, and you know who I called immediately? Of course, White Castle. Ben from White Castle came to the house last week, took a look at things, and we already got the ball rolling on what to do next. When it comes to your roof, you need people you can trust. And trust me, you can trust the good people at White Castle. Check them out, whitecastleroofing.com. White Castle Roofing, built with trust, proven by time. And the Nick Bob Podcast is brought to you by my friends at Runza. There is nothing better than hearing from an old high school football teammate like my former offensive lineman Brett Altman on Twitter, where he went out and he tried the Reuben Runza and loved it. That's what I'm talking about, baby. And my dad, my father, he got his Reuben Runza game right. He gave it two thumbs up. Again, Reuben Runza is available at all Runza locations. It's everything you love about a Reuben wrapped up inside the greatness of a Runza sandwich. So make sure you stop out to Runza, try the brand new Reuben Runza. And speaking of Runzas, don't forget that every Runza is made to order, meaning you can add anything in the kitchen within reason to add on a Runza. Since everyone starts as an original Runza, you can add pickles or ketchup or ranch, whatever. It is up to you. So whether you get a Reuben Runza or get creative and add something to an original Runza, you know it's going to be delicious. So head out to Runza today. And while you're there, tell them your buddy, your pal, Nick Baugh sent you. And the Nick Baugh Podcast is brought to you by my friends at Pella Windows and Door. You know, when it's time to get a new set of windows or a new door, you got to go with Pella. Why? Because they can provide window and door solutions to any home. They can turn your window and door remodeling dreams into a reality. And because the people are great. Vince and Steve and Clint and Brian, the whole gang, they are all fantastic. And you know what else is fantastic? Knowing that you're going to be working with Pella and only Pella the entire time. Do you realize that when you work with some other window companies, all of a sudden questions pop up like who's going to install it? Who's going to pre-finish it? Who's doing that? And before you know it, you're working with like four or five different people. Oh my God. Ugh. You want the convenience and simplicity of working with one company, not three or four. That is Pella. Check them out on the web, PellaOmaha.com. That's PellaOmaha.com. Back to the podcast. You know, with Houston, Jay, one of the things that's interesting to me is the connection between Kelvin Sampson and Quentin Grimes, where it's like, okay, you got both guys were at Blue Bloods. Both didn't work out for obviously vastly different reasons with Sampson at IU and then Quentin Grimes, McDonald's All-American at Kansas. And then both have kind of had to remake themselves at Houston together, and here they are at the Final Four. I love that angle of those two guys and their journey. What do you like most about this Houston journey to get to the Final Four?
Well, it's a different kind of style of play. Like, yep. I've known Kelvin forever too, and you have as well. But Kelvin, when he was at Washington State and in Oklahoma, you know, they were very gritty and have remained so. And he's going to do it on the glass. And I remember when I was out visiting him when he was at Oklahoma, this was probably 2000. So he had those, maybe 2002, maybe it was his final 4 year. I don't remember, but they had Hollis Price and Quantus White, all those guys. And I'm watching practice, and they did this thing called the bubble drill where they had lids on the baskets. The ones that are, you know, it looks like a bubble that goes over. So it'll come off on different angles. And the drill was basically they played 5-on-5 and you scored points by how many rebounds you grabbed, whether it's a defensive rebound, offensive rebound, or extra points. And they just played regular 5-on-5, ran their regular offense and took their normal shots. But every shot literally was a missed shot. And they just, you know, sort of their culture was pursuing the ball. And I'm sure they still do it. I haven't really talked to Kelvin about that much, but that drill made a big impact on me.
Yeah.
You know, sort of the way they went about it. There was no out of bounds line when there was a loose ball. They had to go dive on it wherever it went. And so I think how the game's officiated, and that goes for UCLA too. If the officials allow overt physicality and they allow them to clutch and grab, then both Houston and UCLA have a chance, I think. I mean, Houston's got a better chance to win their game than UCLA has a chance to win its game. But a lot's going to be determined by the whistle. If the referees, you know, I think freedom of movement is on life support. I don't think we've seen much of it in the tournament unless the players, unless the teams, you know, don't play that way at all. And they're willing to allow cutters. But, you know, Houston doesn't allow cutters and you know, they're either going to get fouls called on them or not. Heck, there was a play, you know, in the UCLA-Michigan game, it sort of made me laugh. Like, Hunter Dickinson got two calls on moving screens. And in the second half, he's trying to get to a screen and his defender was basically holding him to get to the screen. And you're going, okay, so if he moves when he sets a screen, it's a foul.
Right.
But he gets tackled on his way to set a screen, and that's not a foul.
Yeah.
And you're going, this isn't the way the game's supposed to, to be. And so it depends on the officiating, frankly.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. It's going to be a big, big factor for both of them. And, you know, a couple more things, Jay, we'll let you run here. With Baylor, they were kind of perception-wise, kind of right there with Gonzaga for portions of the season early. Then they go on COVID pause. It takes a bit for them to get their groove back, but they feel like they're back and rolling now. And man, in 2021, Baylor has a lot of the ingredients that you want in a basketball team. They got great three-point shooting, multiple ball handlers. They got interchangeable defensive parts where they can switch a lot of screens, blow up your stuff. What stands out to you when you look at Baylor and their personnel and makeup?
They've got multiple guys that can get their own shot at the end of a clock. They operate at the end of a shot clock as well as any team out there. And when they came back from their COVID pause, that was a 3-week pause where they had at least eight guys that actually had the virus and it knocked them sideways. So it took them a while. I did their Kansas game and you could see just in timeouts, you know, they were having a hard time kind of breathing.
Right.
And so it was pretty clear they weren't the same team. You don't want to take anything away from Kansas, but this wasn't a vintage Kansas team and Kansas beat them pretty good. And I think it was COVID related, but and then they've got Davion Mitchell, who is, I think, the most indispensable player in the tournament. He's got another gear that other players just don't have.
No.
And then defensively, I haven't seen many on-ball defenders that can guard the way he can guard, the way he reassumes pressure. You can't get past him. He's stronger than hell. I mean, he single-handedly took apart Villanova in the second half of that game. Villanova never turns it over. They had 9 turnovers in the second half and live ball turnovers, which is, you know, they hardly ever have. And primarily Davion Mitchell that did that to him. So I think you take him out when he was in foul trouble in the regional final against Arkansas. That was the only time Arkansas was with him. When he was in the game and really playing, Arkansas couldn't hang with them at all. And I think those two things are directly related.
I agree. I'm totally with you. Mitchell blows me away every time I watch him play. So it sounds like we're going to get Gonzaga Baylor, aren't we? Is that what we think's happening on Monday night?
I think so. I don't think Baylor will allow sort of the offensive rebounding, although Houston does it to everybody.
Yeah, they do.
But Dejon Giroux, as good as he is defensively, like they're not going to be able to bully Baylor. And they bullied Oregon State. There was one thing, though, that Oregon State did that didn't make any sense to me. So Oregon State was getting the hell beat out of them in the first half. They go into halftime. They come out. They play that 1-3-1. And they got Houston to stand around and just throw the ball back and forth at the top. And they never really attacked along the baseline. Dribble penetration was next to nothing. And they tied the game at 55. And I remember there was a timeout. And out of the timeout, Oregon State went man. And I was going, why are they doing that? Like,
right.
Houston hadn't scored on them in the 1-3-1. And they wind up getting a better shot. They rebounded it and kicked it out to Quentin Grimes, who got a 3.
Right.
And then all of a sudden you're going, all right, they feel better about themselves now.
Right.
And then they got another one. And you're going, look, Wayne Tinkle's a great coach, but I just didn't understand that.
I didn't either.
And I would have loved to have seen if they would have played that 1-3-1, if Oregon State could have pulled that one out. Because I think they would have had a really good chance if they would have stayed in it.
Right, because I get that, you know, obviously the hardest thing to do in a zone is rebound defensively, but, I mean, that was going to be hard regardless of what defense you were in, and you were doing okay up until that point. So it's just weird that maybe that would have crept into his mind at that point, but I was totally with you. I mean, usually the school of thought is, from a coaching standpoint, is if you throw a zone at somebody, you know, make them kind of bust you out of it before you take yourself out of it. But, yeah, it'd have been interesting because that game felt like like it was the Grimes 3 swung things late off of that. I'm totally with you.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, when you're having your rhythm disrupted, that's debilitating. And I thought Houston was getting to a point where they were going to start puckering up a little bit.
Right.
And to their credit, they won the game making big plays. And Grimes had 2 of those with those 2 threes that he hit. I remember thinking, okay, that may be the game there, that one decision. And that's how fragile the whole thing can be when you're the underdog.
Okay, so Baylor Gonzaga. Let's hypothetically say that's what we get here, Jay. I'd pick Gonzaga, but I wouldn't be surprised to see Baylor win that game if they do see each other. I just want to see. I mean, it's been well documented where Gonzaga's only played in one game all season that's been decided by single digits, and it was West Virginia back on December 2nd. I just want to see I want to see what this Gonzaga team looks like when it's 5 minutes left, 4 minutes left, and it's a 2-point game, because I want to see just how good they can be in that spot. I mean, would you wouldn't be surprised if Baylor would win if we got that, would you?
I wouldn't be surprised. I would certainly favor Gonzaga.
Yeah.
You know, that game you're talking about, their only single-digit win was West Virginia. I did that game, and Jalen Suggs was hurt. He got hurt early in the game and sat out for a good period of time. That was when Andrew Nembhard came in. I think he had 19 points, and they wound up, winning, I can't remember, by 8 or 7, whatever it was. But when that's your closest game, you know, I think in years past, you'd say, okay, well, who knows what they'll do down the stretch if they have a lot of game pressure on them. I know one thing, or at least I believe it. Gonzaga may lose, but they're not going to choke and they're not going to be scared. They're not built that way. And that USC game, I think anybody who thought that they could be slowed down in that way, they can't be. Baylor's going to have to score 85 points or more to have a chance to win that game, because that game is not going to be decided in the 60s. I know that.
Mm-hmm.
But Baylor's got real, as you know, real length and real athleticism. The one thing they don't do, though, is they don't score in the post.
Nope.
Like, their big guys are all, you know, drop off guys, offensive rebound guys, you know, rollers and all that stuff. I'll be interested to see if Drew Timmy can hang some fouls on that, because that dude is so crafty and skilled and smart and talented. He is not going to be worried about, hey, this guy's longer than me, he can block my shot. Evan Mobley would have bothered him if that were the case. Nothing bothers that guy.
No.
He's averaging seven games now against Power 5 teams this year. It's not like they were playing the bottom of any conference. They're playing, you know, the best Power 5 teams. He's averaging 28 a game.
Sheesh. I mean, yeah, any narrative out there, they're like, well, I mean, what would they do if they had to play a full schedule? I mean, come on. I mean, I'm watching. To me, it was the Oklahoma game blew me away, where it felt like Oklahoma in that second round game was like, man, Oklahoma's checking a lot of the boxes. They're playing pretty good, and they're down 10 or 12 at half. And you just kind of sit there. Same thing even with the Creighton game, where it was, you know, felt like Creighton was, you know, Zegarowski was making shots, and then you blink and you're down 17 points. And it's just, they score with such ease. It just to be, you know, Baylor. I just look at Baylor defensively from a personnel standpoint. I just don't know how gimmicky you can get with, oh, we're going to double this post or double this ball screen. You probably got to be able to mano-a-mano just guard individually when you're playing Gonzaga. And I think Baylor's probably got the best defensive personnel. They may not be the best half-court defense, but I think they got the best defensive personnel. So man, would that be a fun matchup if we got to see it?
I think so. I think I agree with everything you just said. I think you're going to have to score really efficiently on the offensive end to keep pressure on them. You're not going to get stop after stop after stop. You're going to get some, but the way I look at it, Nick, is I get I'm mesmerized by the quality of shot that they consistently get. So over time, like you were talking about the Oklahoma game, Gonzaga just got better shots every time down than Oklahoma got. And you go, okay, Oklahoma's playing well, but they're going to have to keep making these difficult shots to stay in this game. And they're not going to be able to do it. It's like if you had a match play, like a golf match, and one player hits the ball inside of 5 feet all the time, and the other guy's got to make 15 footers. Like,
right,
he's going to lose ultimately.
Right.
The 5-footer's going to win. And, you know, consistent 5-footers are going to beat 15-footers every time.
Yeah.
And that's what they do. They get layups. They get easier shots. and they put themselves in a position to be successful more than any other team. And it's just, it's, I think it's beautiful to watch.
It is.
I've had a blast watching those guys.
Yeah. I mean, and this may sound stupid, Jay, but one of the other reasons you got to score against Gonzaga is it also, then it gives you the best chance to get stops because yep. you're not constantly in defensive transition situations. Cause then you're going to get crushed. I mean, they are unbelievable in transition.
Yeah, and they create, whether it's a make or a miss, they get it out quickly and get it up court. And heck, in the USC game, the first, you know, their first play of the game, they switch, Drew Timmy switches out on Taj Eady and took the ball from him.
Right.
Like he knocked the ball away from a point guard and took it the other way. And you're going, if Uh-oh. The center, the opposing center is stealing the ball from your point guard, what chance do you have?
Probably not a lot. Probably.
That was incredible. That was just incredible.
Oh man. Well, I hope we get to see it. I mean, obviously I hope we get just good games, but it'd be fun to get Baylor and Gonzaga. Jay Billis, ESPN. Jay, kept you way longer than I said I would, man. You know, I appreciate you. Hope all is well, and I thank you for coming on my pod again, man.
Always a pleasure, brother. Thanks for having me.
You got it, Jay. All right, my thanks to Pella. If you're thinking about a new window or a new door, now is the time. Check them out online on the web at PellaOmaha.com. That's PellaOmaha.com. And my thanks to my good friends at Runza. Best fries on the planet. Great burgers. Cheese Runza. Delicious. The food is simply fantastic. Runza makes it all better.
A Huda Media Production.